So this is the second lecture in financial management. The topic today is financial arithmetic, and the purpose of this lecture is to set up the mathematical toolkit that we will need for the rest of this module. Where we left off at the end of yesterday's lecture was with the following idea: that companies or organizations with shareholders are run along the following principle. There is a key financial goal. Do you remember what it is? Maximize shareholder wealth or shareholder value, subject to other constraints, which are basically to do with keeping all of the other stakeholders other than the shareholders happy. Shareholder value or shareholder wealth is a number. It's a number today. And that's what we want to maximize. That begs the question, how do we get our hands on that number? And the way we do it in finance is we attempt to forecast the cash flows out into the future that we believe will be generated in return for undertaking a particular investment. So the first part of the solution procedure is to forecast those cash flows. Here's the good news for you. I won't ask you ever in this module to forecast the cash flows, because that's too difficult. That requires skill, knowledge, and experience. So any problem that I confront you with in this module will involve me giving you the set of cash flow forecasts. What you've got to learn and know to do is, what do you do with those cash flows? What do you do with those cash flows in order to come up with this single number that, for example, represents shareholder value today? Because that's what we're interested in. So what you've got to be able to do is grab hold of those future cash flow forecasts and turn them into a single number. Now, those cash flow forecasts refer to points out into the future. You have to grab hold of each of those future cash flow forecasts and bring them back to the present day. That process is called discounting, and we need to learn, how do you discount future cash flows? Now, there's more than one way to come at this. Inevitably, I want to do it in as simple and intuitive a way as possible. And that way involves recognizing that there's a clue out there in the real world. If we look at how banks work out the interest they should pay you on any investment you make. So if you deposit a sum of money today in a bank account that pays interest at a particular rate out into the future, you can work out how much interest should you be entitled to at each point in the future. And there's a simple example on this slide to see how this works. So imagine you invest a pound. It's not very much, is it? Imagine you invest a pound today at 10% interest. That's the rate of interest. Now, be aware, I appear to know the rate of interest, and it doesn't change throughout time. So really, there's no risk in this problem. This is a risk-free situation, because all we're interested today in is, how do we deal with the time dimension? How do we deal with the fact that the cash flows we're interested in are occurring out into the future? In this context, the cash flows are the interest payments. We want to do something with those cash flows to get back to the present day. So for the moment, we're freezing out the risk dimension. We're just concentrating on the time dimension. So let's assume then that the interest rate we can earn is known today for sure, and it's 10%. Well, if you invest a pound for 1 year, at 10%, the interest is 10p. So at the end of that first year, your investment's no longer £1, it's £1.10. If you can roll over that investment, if it's invested in order to earn compound interest, all of that £1.10 earns 10% interest the following year. The initial £1 earns another 10p of interest, but so does the 10p of interest that you earned in the first year earn 10% interest. And 10% of 10p is 1 pence. So the total amount of interest you earn in the second year is 10p plus 1p. That's 11 pence. So by the end of the second year, you're sitting with £1.21 in your bank account, and so on, and so on. And you see the pattern. For each additional year that you leave your money invested at 10%, your money grows by a factor of 1 plus 10%. There's the general result. For every pound you invest today in a bank account, at a fixed rate of big R, for every pound you invest, if you leave that money invested for a total of T periods, and typically we'll measure periods in units of a year, if we quote the interest rate as so many percent per year, then the natural unit of time is a year, and after T years, that's how much your money has grown to. So that's the general formula. If you're interested, suppose the compounding wasn't done once a year. Suppose instead the compounding was done more frequently. If the compounding is done N times a year, then your money grows faster because you're calculating the interest more frequently. And as you achieve interest in each period, that interest is thereafter present to earn more interest itself. So there's the general formula when the compounding is more frequent. That begs the question, what if you could compound? What if you could compound the interest every instant of time? Would the money in your bank account grow indefinitely? Would it grow beyond bound? And the answer is no. There's a limit to how fast your money can grow. In that idealized situation where interest is being calculated at every instant of time, your money will grow exponentially. So that's the limiting case, where your money grows as fast as it possibly can. Now, in this module, we're not really interested in this. Indeed, we're not even interested in this more frequent compounding. I just include these for completeness. But as you go further with your study of finance, in particular, as you go into IB 235 Finance 1 and learn about derivative securities, you'll certainly come across this exponential growth phenomenon. So that's my quick summary of how a bank account accrues interest. But this isn't a module on banking. We've come at this because we want to understand the process of discounting. Discounting is compound interest in reverse. With compound interest, you know how much money you've got today. You know the value of your stake today, and you then proceed to work out what are the cash flows out into the future. Those cash flows are the interest payments at the end of each period. But that's not the problem I'm interested in. The problem I'm interested in presents me with a set of cash flow forecasts out into the future. I want to work backwards to see how much value did I have today. So for us, we want to be able to discount, and discounting is compound interest in reverse gear. I've reminded you about how the value of your investment grows under compound interest. Turn that formula on its head. That's what we need to be able to do. If we expect £1 T periods from today, and we discount that £1 out into the future back to today, in what's called present value terms, that's how much it's worth today. I don't multiply by the factor of 1 plus big R, the interest rate, all to the power T, big T, where T is the time out into the future. I divide by that because I'm doing the opposite of compounding. Why is this the correct answer? If you were to invest this amount of money today in an investment that paid an interest rate of big R, a rate of return of big R, and you invested this sum of money for T periods from now, you would have £1. That's what I mean when I say that this expression is the present value today of a cash flow of £1 T periods from today. And what I hope you see immediately is, whatever that present value is, it depends on whatever the interest rate is. Or now that we're discounting, we don't call that the interest rate, we call it the discount rate. Now, something we've still to learn, and we're not going to get there for a few lectures yet, something we've got to get to grips with in this module is, how do you decide on the value of big R? What is the discount rate? Because clearly, that's critical. All we can handle at the moment, after all, we're just beginning, all we can handle at the moment is we now have the prescription. We now know what to do with each and every future cash flow forecast. We ask ourselves, how far out into the future is that cash flow? I.e., what's the value of big T? What is the value of the so-called discount rate? For the moment, we just have to take on trust where that comes from. What's the value of big R? And then we multiply whatever that future cash flow forecast is. Here I was assuming it was a pound, but it doesn't matter how many pounds it is. Whatever that future cash flow forecast is, T periods from now, multiply it by this so-called discount factor. It's also known as present value factor, and the answer is what you want. The answer is the value today of that future cash flow forecast. And there's a bit of explanation on the slide about why is this correct. I'll leave you to read that. It's better that we dive into an example, a simple example, to see how this works. I like to draw cartoons or diagrams. I think it helps. This is an example of what I call a cash flow diagram. It's a diagram with cash flows. The horizontal line is the timeline. Today is time zero. So what I'm looking at here is a 5-year investment. Time stretches out 5 years into the future. What the diagram is representing is the following. In return for investing £1,000 today, it's an investment, so I take money out of my pocket and invest it in something, so I represent it with a downwards pointing arrow. In return for that investment today, I expect to generate cash flows at the end of the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth years. And in order to keep the problem nice and simple, I'm assuming that each of those cash flows is of the same size, namely 300. So that's the story that the diagram depicts. And the question I want to answer is this a good investment or a bad investment? Now, if you didn't know anything about discounting, if you didn't know anything about it matters when in the future the cash flow arises, it's not enough to know how big the cash flow is. The timing of the cash flow is also important. As we say in finance, the time value of money is a key consideration. If we didn't know about that, we might look at this diagram and say, that's a good investment. Why? Well, in return for an initial investment of £1,000 today, we look forward to receiving a total of 5 lots of 300. That's 1,500. And 1,500 is greater than 1,000, so this is a good investment. That logic is seriously flawed. And the flaw is, it's not taking any account of the fact that these future cash flows are staggered out into the future. That logic, 5 lots of 300, that's 1,500, that's bigger than 1,000, that would only be correct if all 5 of these cash flows occurred today. They don't. It's wrong to compare these future cash flow forecasts with today's investment. What we have to do first is calculate the present value of each of those cash flow forecasts. In other words, we have to discount each and every one of these 5 future cash flow forecasts back to the present day. Now you know how to do that. You grab hold of each of the future cash flows and multiply by the appropriate discount factor. Remember what the discount factor was? 1 divided by 1 plus big R, the discount rate, all to the power big T, where T measures how far out into the future is that particular cash flow forecast. And that's exactly what I'm doing down here. I'm grabbing hold of the cash flow that I expect 1 year from today, and I'm multiplying it by 1 divided by 1 plus R, and I'm told that R is to be 10%. So I'm substituting the value of 10%, or 0.1 for big R. Multiplying by 1 over 1 plus R is the same as dividing by 1 plus R, and that's exactly what I'm doing here. That's exactly what I'm doing here. The only difference now is for the second cash flow, big T is 2. So I'm discounting more heavily. Likewise for the third cash flow, the fourth cash flow, the fifth cash flow. Each of the five terms on the right-hand side of this equation is the present value today of the corresponding cash flow, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years into the future. Once I've got those five present values, I'm just adding them all up to give me a single present value that I can then compare directly with today's investment. This is a good investment. Not because five lots of 300 is 1,500, and that's bigger than 1,000, but because the sum of the present values is 1,137.23, and that's bigger than the initial investment of 1,000. But that depends critically on the value of big R. So what I should really say to you is, if the discount rate big R is 10%, this is a good investment. If the discount rate big R had been quite a bit larger, and you should check this for yourself, say 20%, you'll find that it's not a good investment. You'll find that the sum of the present values adds up to a number that's less than 1,000. So already we're beginning to appreciate this is not quite as straightforward as we might first have imagined. Whether the investment is a good investment or a bad investment depends critically on the value of the discount rate big R. And we'll learn in the weeks to follow why that is. At the moment, you just have to take that on trust. Incidentally, the surplus in this case, the difference between the present value of the future cash flows and the initial investment, so in this case that's the 137.23, that's given a name. It's called the net present value, or NPV for short. So when big R is 10%, this particular investment has a positive NPV. That's our signal for it being a good investment. Now, I don't know about you, the mechanics of what you have to do then to calculate present values is not difficult, but if there are lots of cash flows, it can be laborious. It can take a bit of time. For that reason, we're on the lookout for shortcuts, whenever there is such a shortcut. Now, the example I gave you was one in which, in return for that initial investment of £1,000, we expect to generate a stream of cash flows out as far as 5 years into the future, and they were all the same size. They were all equal to 300. That sort of structure is known as an annuity. So where the pattern of future cash flows is as follows, all of the cash flows out into the future are of the same size, and they occur at regular intervals, typically spaced apart by 1 year, we refer to that as an annuity. So in our problem that we've just considered, in return for that initial investment of £1,000, we were looking at a 5 year annuity where the annual cash flow was 300. When you're looking at an annuity, it turns out there's a shortcut. There's a quicker way to calculate the present value. Now, you don't need to know why. The chances are the maths that you already know is good enough to prove why. But I don't need you to know why. I just need you to know how. When you're looking at an annuity, so in general, there will be big N of these cash flows. If you prefer, you could have labelled big N, big T, it doesn't matter. The important point is that all of the cash flows are the same size, I'm calling that big C for cash flow, and they're spaced apart uniformly, they occur at regular intervals, there's a shortcut. There's a shortcut to calculating the present value of this cash flow stream. You don't have to work out the present value of each individual cash flow and then add up the present values as we just did. Instead, you can just grab hold of one of the cash flows and multiply it by what's called the annuity factor. I don't need you to know where the annuity factor comes from. I just need you to know the formula for the annuity factor. And there it is. There is the formula. So the shortcut is to work out this single factor, the annuity factor. So all you need to do is identify what's the value of big N equally big T. In other words, how long out into the future does the annuity persist? And B, what's the value of the discount rate, big R? Substitute those values, calculate the annuity factor, and then multiply one of the cash flows, big C, by that factor. That does all the work for you, and the outcome is you have the present value of the whole cash flow stream at a stroke. Let's just check it works for our example. We need to go back to our example on the previous slide. So that was a 5-year annuity, so big N or big T is 5, and the discount rate, big R, was 10% or 0.1. So we have to substitute 0.1 for big R and 5 for big N or big T, and if we do that, we find that the annuity factor to 4 decimal places is 3.7908. So all we have to do now is grab hold of one of the cash flows, they were all equal to 300, and multiply that 300 by this annuity factor. And that's exactly what I do here, and I get the same answer, thank goodness. You can check your working, because if you look in your pack of handouts, you'll see there are a set of what's called annuity tables. But the annuity tables are not as accurate as this calculation. There isn't enough space on the sheet of paper. So to 2 decimal places, which is all the tables are quoted, to 2 decimal places, this 5-year annuity factor, when the discount rate is 10%, is 3.79. Now, I don't want you to use the tables. I don't mind if you use the tables to check your working. I want you to be able to use the formula. So maybe you want to note that down somewhere on the slide. Need to know this formula, need to use it. So that's the shortcut when we're looking at an annuity. There's a special case of an annuity that goes on forever and ever and ever. I guess it's a bit like me, just goes on and on and on. That's called a perpetuity. So a perpetuity is an even more special case where big N or big T is out at infinity. That turns out to be good news for us because the formula simplifies. That previous formula for the annuity factor, if we go back and have another look at it, if we go back to this formula for the annuity factor, but now we ask ourselves, what happens to that formula as we let big N, or equally big T, get bigger and bigger and bigger? In other words, the final cash flow is further and further out into the future. Well, this term, this second term in the square brackets, is getting smaller and smaller and smaller, because you're dividing 1 by a number that's getting bigger and bigger and bigger as big N grows. In the limit, as we are way out into the future, this second term is essentially 0. So the whole expression in the square brackets is getting closer and closer to 1. And in the limit, the factor, the so-called annuity factor, collapses to 1 over R. So when you're faced with a perpetuity, all you have to do is grab hold of one of the cash flows. They're all the same, remember. Grab hold of one of the cash flows and multiply it by 1 over R. Multiplying by 1 over R is the same as dividing by R. So when you're looking at a perpetuity, the formula for present value is the simplest of all. It's just the cash flow, they're all the same, big C, divided by the discount rate. Beware. Big C divided by big R, not big C divided by 1 plus big R. That's a common mistake. The present value of a perpetuity is obtained by dividing any one of the cash flows by the discount rate on its own. And the last bullet point leaves you with a little challenge to see if you can convince yourself that this formula is correct without doing any complicated maths. Let's pause. Let's pause and ask ourselves, is this all just theory? Is this really going to be of any use to us? Well, hang on in there, because provided I can get to the end of my slides today, you'll see that this type of cash flow structure is relevant to the world of bonds. And bonds come under the heading of debt. So we're not wasting our time exploring these special cases. These special cases are directly useful to us when we're looking at financial instruments called bonds, as you'll see. But what about the other financing category that we mentioned yesterday, equities? How do they work? When you invest in equities, i.e. shares in listed companies, typically, not always, but typically, you expect to receive dividends out into the future. So the cash flows in the case of an equity investment are dividends. And generally, and we'll learn this, we'll find this out later in the module when we look at dividend policy, generally companies try to grow the amount of the dividend per share throughout time at a reasonably steady rate. So when we're looking at equities, the pattern that will typically confront us isn't one in which all of the cash flows out into the future are the same value as they would be if we were looking at an annuity or a perpetuity. Instead, the pattern is more similar to one in which the cash flows grow at a reasonably steady, uniform rate. So we need also to be able to deal with that situation, because that's relevant to the world of equities. So what we have on this slide is what I call a growing perpetuity. I remind you, a perpetuity itself is a cash flow stream in which all of the cash flows are the same size, and that pattern is repeated at regular intervals indefinitely into the future. Now I'm adding an extra layer of complexity. The difference now is the cash flows do not remain the same size. Instead, they grow at a uniform rate that I'm labelling big G. So, if the cash flow one period into the future is big C, the cash flow two periods into the future is big C times 1 plus G. It's grown at the rate G. The cash flow three periods into the future is big C times 1 plus G all squared. Why 1 plus G all squared? Because there's been two further years of growth at rate big G. So a common situation that we have to deal with in finance is, how do we work out the present value of a cash flow stream that looks like this? Now, these cash flows are going on and on indefinitely into the future. Again, I don't need you to know why. I don't need you to know the underlying maths, but I do need you to know the result. And the result is a famous result. It's known as the Gordon growth formula, after Myron Gordon, who recently died, poor chap, who first came up with this formula. There it is. What could be simpler? The present value today, that's time zero, of a cash flow stream where the first of those cash flows, that's exactly 1 year into the future, is big C, where all subsequent cash flows grow at a fixed rate big G, and where the discount rate is fixed at big R, the present value today of all of that is given by this nice, simple formula. Now, think back to your A-level mathematics, and you've all done A-level maths or the equivalent. I guess you met something called geometric series. I guess you met something called the sum to infinity of a geometric series. That's the mathematics that lies behind the Gordon growth formula. And if you can think back to sum to infinity of geometric series, you'll know there's a condition that needs to be satisfied for the formula to work. And that turns out in this context to be big R has to be bigger than big G. So you need to remember that formula. Actually, remembering the formula isn't what students generally find difficult. What they find difficult is deciding what goes upstairs. That's the tricky bit. So here's the rule, which you might like to write down. What goes upstairs is a cash flow. It's always the cash flow 1 year into the future, from wherever you're standing. In other words, it's whatever this cash flow is. Now, that might strike you as rather obvious at the moment, but when you come to try one of the seminar problem questions for next week, you might be puzzled. I'll leave you to think about that. I'll just say again that in the Gordon growth formula, what appears upstairs in the numerator is always understood to be the cash flow you expect 1 year into the future. We can rewrite the Gordon growth formula in this form, and again, that will have more meaning for us as we go through the module, but what that's reminding us is that the total rate of return, big R, is made up out of two components. There's a capital growth term, and there's what I might describe as an income, or in the context of equities, a dividend yield term. Again, that will mean more to us a bit later on. Something to come back and think about. Here's the most difficult scenario of all. I'm now pooling everything together. We've looked at an annuity. We've looked at a perpetuity. We've generalised the perpetuity to a growing perpetuity. You've guessed it. The most complicated of all is where we go back to that annuity and generalise it to grow as well. So the most complicated situation is one in which the cash flows out into the future grow at a fixed rate, but they stop after some point in the future. The cash flow stream is truncated. So that's a growing annuity, and here's the formula for the present value of that. Now the good news. I solemnly promise to give you this formula on the front cover of any question paper I set you for either the class test or the final exam. If I fail to do that, you may sue me. You might not get any money because I'm poor, but you may still sue me. In other words, you don't have to remember this formula. But there is something you do have to remember. You have to remember how that formula simplifies in each of the three previous cases. For example, suppose there was no growth. Suppose big G was zero. If you set big G equal to zero here and here, convince yourself that what you get is the formula for the present value of an annuity. You do need to remember that, because I will never give you the formula for the present value of an annuity. I'll give you the formula for the present value of a growing annuity. I expect you to be able to recover the simpler formula for yourselves. Likewise, I'll never give you the formula for the present value of a perpetuity. I expect you to know that you can get that from this annuity formula by letting big N or big T go to infinity so that this term disappears and you're left with 1 over R as the factor to multiply any one of the cash flows. Again, let's go back to the general formula. I expect you to be able to recover for yourself the Gordon growth formula. The Gordon growth formula refers to a growing perpetuity. In other words, the limiting case where big N or big T goes to infinity. Because we've been careful to ensure big R is bigger than big G, this expression that I'm raising to the power of big N, this expression 1 plus big G divided by 1 plus big R is less than 1. because G is less than big R. So as you raise that expression, 1 plus G divided by 1 plus R, to higher and higher powers, the value you get is getting smaller and smaller. And in the limit, as you let big N go towards infinity, this term disappears. So what you're left with inside the square bracket is just a factor of 1. And what you're left with overall is this factor, big C divided by big R minus big G, and that's the Gordon growth formula. And you need to know to do that for yourself. So let me say it again. And if you didn't write it down, maybe you should. You don't need to memorize this formula for the present value of a growing annuity. You do need to remember how to recover from that formula, the formula for the three special cases, the Gordon growth formula for a growing perpetuity, the formula for the present value of an annuity, that's where the cash flows are not growing, and the simplest of all cases, the formula for a perpetuity. Now let me try and persuade you I haven't been wasting your time for the last 30 or 35 minutes. Let me now present to you the simplest case of a debt-like instrument, a bond. I would call this a plain vanilla bond. Bonds can be, and increasingly are, more complicated than this. This is your starter pack in the world of bonds, or as they're also known, the world of fixed income. So here's a bond. If you own a bond, and you own a bond if you've loaned money to an institution, and in return for that loan you receive regular interest payments, and in the world of bonds we call those interest payments coupon payments, coupon interest payments. So big C now is the coupon interest payment, and in the simplest cases the interest payment is the same size, it's fixed at regular points out into the future until the loan matures, until the bond matures. So this is a bond, a loan that has big T periods, let's say big T years, to go until it expires. At each of these regular points into the future, the bond pays a fixed coupon interest payment, but at the end of the bond's life it does something else. It also pays back the initial face value of the loan. In order to make the cash flow diagram as general as possible, I need you to understand that each of these cash flows is to be thought of as a percentage of face value. So for instance, the coupon interest payment might be 8%. If the initial face value of the bond, that would be written on the bond certificate, if the initial face value were £1 million, then the size of the coupon interest payment is £80,000. It's 8% of the face value of £1 million. I'm writing here big C to mean 8%. That's the coupon interest rate. And the reason I do it that way is I can then use this cash flow diagram for bonds of varying face value. The same approach applies to all of them. So, here is the coupon interest rate, but at the end of the bond's life, the bond also pays back its face value. That's 100% of its face value. And that's why there's a plus 100 appearing at the end. Now, the face value doesn't change. The face value is written on the bond certificate, and it's used to calculate the amount of the interest payments. In order to do that calculation, you need to know the face value and the coupon interest rate. And that's what I mean by big C in this cash flow diagram. Well, you now know how to calculate present values. It's the same rule. Take hold of each of these future cash flows and discount it back to the present day. The only difference is, because we're in the world of bonds or fixed income, we refer to the discount rate as the yield. So rather than use big R here, I use little y. Because I'm assuming that the bond, I continue to own the bond until it matures, this particular discount rate is known as the yield to maturity. The assumption I'm making is, I don't sell this bond before the bond expires. I'm looking at the possibility of holding on to the bond until the loan matures, so I am entitled to receive all of the future coupon interest payments and also get back the face value when the bond matures. Now we can use our annuity result, because if you look at all of the terms on the right-hand side, apart from the last one, I hope you see that we've got an annuity here. It's a T-period annuity, where the discount rate is little y, the yield to maturity. So we have a shortcut for working out the present value of all of these terms, and we already know how to deal with this. We just take this factor of 100 and multiply by the so-called present value or discount factor. So the mechanics that we've learned in this lecture is directly applicable to the pricing of bonds. The present value that we calculate is the fair value for this bond, the fair value today. And we can compare that with whatever the market price of the bond is to see whether the bond is trading at a fair price or whether the bond is either trading cheaply or is a bit expensive. That's useful, as we'll see. Net present value then. I introduced to you the concept of net present value. I mentioned it in the case of my specific example. Let's now look at the general case. So think back to that earlier example, an initial investment of £1,000 today, giving rise to a stream of future cash flows at regular intervals out 5 years into the future, 300, 300, blah, blah, blah. The general case has an initial investment of big I for investment. And in return, a set of cash flows out into the future. Notice the subscripts. In general, these cash flows are not the same size anymore. We're not looking at an annuity, we're looking at the general case. So the cash flows could grow or get smaller or do a bit of both as we go further forward into the future. Here's the expression for the net present value. You now know that. So if I ask you a question, as I do in the seminars for next week, calculate the net present value of this investment when the discount rate, another name for discount rate, is cost of capital. And again, we'll learn why in the weeks to come. Provided I tell you the value of big R and I give you the cash flows, you can proceed to work out the NPV. And our rule for deciding whether the investment is a good investment or a bad investment will be, is the NPV positive, that's good, or negative, that's bad. An investment that turns out to have a positive NPV is expected to add value. An investment that turns out to have a negative NPV is expected to destroy value. Value for whom? The shareholders. Remember what the company is all about. It's all about managing the company to maximize shareholder value. So the message is clear. We should want to invest in projects that add value for the shareholders. We should want to invest in projects that have a positive NPV. Now, let me just have a couple more minutes of your time. This is in order to help you answer at least one of the questions in the seminar next week. Net present value is what we will want to work with in this module. But I need you to be aware of a related concept called internal rate of return, or IRR. We won't make much use of it, but you will come into contact with other people in the real world who do a lot of their thinking in terms of IRRs. So I need you to know, what is the IRR? Here's the definition. The IRR is a particular value of the discount rate big R. It's the particular value of big R that results in a value of zero for the NPV. The IRR is not necessarily an achievable rate of return. It's a theoretical concept. It's the value of the discount rate that would make the NPV zero. In the simplest of cases, and that's generally what we'll be looking at, So in the simplest of cases, where the initial investment is represented by a negative cash flow, money coming out of my pocket being invested in a particular project, and in return for that, I expect to generate a set of positive cash flows out into the future. So in the simplest case, where the cash flow diagram always looks as follows, start with a negative cash flow, then give rise to a stream of positive cash flows, the graph of net present value, as a function of the discount rate, is always shaped like that. For a given set of cash flow forecasts, as you start to crank up the discount rate big R, the value of NPV gets lower and lower, because all of those future cash flows are being discounted at a higher rate. Their present values are therefore coming down. The initial investment is not changing, of course. So the graph of NPV versus R is a curve, and it slopes downwards from left to right. It crosses the horizontal axis at one point. In other words, there's a single value of the discount rate that makes the NPV equal zero. That is the IRR, and I'll tell you more about that at the beginning of next week's lecture. Thanks very much.